Hello, this is Father Bob Warren of the Franciscan Friars of the Atonement. Thank you for listening to this rebroadcast of the Ave Maria Hour radio show. The Friars' popular Ave Maria Hour was first brought to the radio airwaves in 1939, recorded in New York City and on the mountainside grounds at Granmore, a home in Garrison, New York. These timeless classic stories of the Bible and the lives of the saints came to life each week through dramatic reenactment by professional actors and actresses. You know, friends, Christ once said, "Do not hide your treasure under a bushel." In saying this, he meant, share your gifts, share your talents. The Friars of the Atonement feel the message in these broadcasts remains as powerful and timely as when they were originally aired, and we are so happy to be able to share them with you today. To learn more about the missions and ministries of the Friars of the Atonement, I invite you to visit our website, www.atonementfriars.org. In the meantime, sit back and enjoy this rebroadcast of the Ave Maria Hour.
This is the story of Mother Lorena of Granmore. The story of a woman's search for God, and through him, for her destiny. Because Mother Lorena lived such a full and energetic life, we are devoting two programs to her story. And now, part one, Three Knots in a Cord. Our story begins in 1894, when a fashionable young lady named Annie White wrote a letter to one of her contemporaries.
My dear, you'll never believe it, but my sister Lorena is actually going to become a religious. She told us yesterday she's going to join the community of the Sisters of the Holy Child in Albany. Can you imagine anything more astonishing? Poor mother is dreadfully upset, of course. There was quite a scene about it.
But, Lorena, dear, this is... well, it's ridiculous.
Mother, you must have realized for a long time that I'm not happy.
But why shouldn't you be happy, Lorena? You're popular and pretty, and I'm sure we've never refused you anything you wanted.
You've been wonderful, Mother. But I feel so strongly that there's something else. Something I must do with my life.
I always thought one day you'd meet some nice young man. Isn't that enough for any girl?
Oh, I've always known that I'd never marry.
These sisters, as they call themselves. I'm sure they're very fine women, or I should never have sent you to study at their academy, but after all, there's something very, very unreal about them. I'm not at all in favor of this copying Rome in the Episcopal Church.
It's not copying Rome, Mother. It's just returning to the real tradition of the church.
Lorena, I can't believe that a sensible, clever girl like you can want to give up all her advantages for any such nonsense.
Mother, perhaps the best thing would be to let me try and see. It'll be several years before I take vows.
Vows? Lorena, what is it you want?
Oh, please, Mother. Let me go to Albany with your blessing.
Certainly not with my blessing, Lorena.
So you see, it's all settled. Of course, the sisters are very high church. They have to promise obedience and they can't get married. But there isn't any question about Lorena's having to give up her inheritance or anything really foolish like that. I suppose she can come home anytime she wants to.
No, the Sisters of the Holy Child did not take the vow of poverty. More and more, this omission began to trouble Lorena, although she was otherwise quite happy at Albany. Already, she had begun her lifelong devotion to St. Francis of Assisi. And surely the very cornerstone of Franciscan service to God was devotion to Our Lady Poverty. At last, she secured permission from her superior to lay this problem before the Reverend Lewis Watson, of whom she had heard through family friends. She wrote to him at his mission station in Omaha, and presently he replied,
You ask me if there is any community in the Episcopal Church vowed to corporate poverty. If there be such, I have never heard of it. If there were one, it might serve as salt to preserve the lump. I understand very well your desire for a stricter rule. The great Dean Robbins agrees with you, as you perhaps know.
Lorena, by permission of her superior, who was perplexed but sympathetic, consulted Dean Robbins and other prominent theologians. Reluctantly but candidly, they agreed that as long as she felt as she did, she could not properly continue with the Sisters of the Holy Child, yet they could suggest no other order instead. And so, Lorena wrote to Father Watson,
I've taken a grave decision, Father Watson. I'm going to England with my aunt. I have a letter to the Sisters of Bethany in London. If they will permit it, I plan to study their rule as a postulant. But, and now, Father, comes the real dream. Not to join their order, but if God pleases, to prepare myself to begin a band of mission sisters in America. We would be Franciscans in the truest sense, vowed to poverty and the service of God's poor.
The answer came while Lorena was studying with the Sisters of Bethany.
God moves in a mysterious way, for now I can speak to you of my own dream, cherished through many years. It is simply this, to be used by God to found a religious order of mission priests, to be called the Society of the Atonement.
A year later, Lorena wrote to her sister Annie, who now lived with their mother in California.
I can hardly wait to see you, Annie, dear. Will you find it very strange to see your sister in a brown Franciscan habit? If you knew the joy it gives me to wear it at last, although, of course, it's only a symbol because I don't belong to the Sisters of Bethany. It's wonderful to think that we can go together to Rome and to Assisi before we sail for home and whatever new life God decides to show me.
The two sisters, one in a coarse brown habit, the other beautifully dressed in the height of fashion, shared an almost equal delight in their tour of Italy. For Lorena, the high point came at Assisi.
Dear Father Watson, I've seen it, the place where St. Francis lived, and I've knelt at his tomb. I've seen the convent where St. Clare lived with her nuns. I've really been to Assisi. How can I tell you what I feel? But you'll understand without my trying to express it. And I must tell you what happened. You see, Annie and I had the good fortune to meet a friar who spoke English. Father Bernardine, you'll remember to pray for us.
Certainly, my daughter.
I ask it, you see, because I need prayers. You see, I'm what... Well, what I suppose you'd consider a heretic.
You? A heretic? In that habit?
Yes. I'm not a Roman Catholic, Father.
Then we shall pray all the harder, my daughter. Keep the crucifix I gave you, and remember that Christ is the shepherd of wandering sheep.
The sisters returned to America on the Britannic. It happened that Lorena's deck chair was next to that of an Englishwoman, Miss Mary Buxton. Later, Mary Buxton had occasion to write to her own sister in London.
And now, my dear sister, I have something very strange to tell you. I have regained my faith, or rather I found faith for the first time. But let me tell you what happened. There was a very beautiful young woman sitting beside me on deck reading. Somehow I liked her face so much that I ventured to ask her what she was reading.
It's the life of St. Francis of Assisi, Miss Buxton. Do you know it?
I've heard of him, of course. Rather a fanatic.
Oh, yes. A fanatic for the love of God and Our Lady Poverty. Just like the fisherman of Galilee, he left all and followed him.
Religion does affect some minds, strangely. Oh, forgive me, I didn't mean to be rude.
Oh, I'm quite sane, I think. And so was St. Francis. There's nothing strange about loving God. The strangeness is that he should love us.
You believe that there is a God and that he does love us.
Why? Miss Buxton, I can only go by, well, by what happens. When you love God and trust him, as St. Francis did, everything falls into place. There are no more real problems. Everything's a great surging tide of strength that shapes your whole life in the way he wants it.
Has it happened that way for you?
Not yet. And perhaps I'm not worthy, but I'm trying. And I truly believe that he never disregards a sacrifice made for him or a soul offered to him in utter obedience.
Forgive me if I seem personal, but I never met an Anglican nun before. I didn't realize that people, well, people like us, could feel quite so deeply about such things.
Anyone who wants to love God can. You just have to ask God to help you.
Just ask?
Yes. With all the strength of your soul, ask. And God will give you grace.
May I borrow the book?
Oh, yes. And I'll pray for you.
It was the beginning of a deep friendship between the sisters and Mary Buxton. About a year later, Annie wrote to her,
"My dear Mary, you will certainly be as astonished as I to learn that Lorena's destiny has changed almost overnight. She and Father Watson have met at last, but not as they expected, through her going to Omaha to start her order there. Instead, Father Watson has left Omaha. This is a dreadful disappointment to my sister, but Father Watson is radiantly confident that God had other designs for her. And, in fact, it does seem that something quite unlikely and yet hopeful might be in the wind."
What was in the wind emerged in a letter written by a devout Anglican lady named Julia Chadwick to two friends, the Elliott sisters, in New York.
"My dears, I have such splendid news. You remember, of course, our little brown church outside Garrison, the one we call Raymoor. You know how abandoned and desecrated it was, what with the tramps living in it and the roof falling in, and how we wished that someone, and preferably some follower of St. Francis, might take over its care and also work among the country people. Well, I found just the person, or rather two persons. One is Father Lewis Watson, whom you must have heard of. He's a very famous preacher. The other is a delightful girl of excellent family who's been trained as a Franciscan religious in England. She wants to found a truly Franciscan order with our little church as its home. Father Watson would act as advisor and chaplain. Sister Lorena has two friends, also religious, to work with her. And I thought we could arrange to rent part of the old diamond place for them to live in. It's falling down, of course, but they don't seem to mind at all."
Not long afterwards, Annie reported in a letter to Julia Chadwick,
"My dear Miss Chadwick, my sister Lorena is so busy preparing for Christmas that she hasn't a moment to write. It's been dreadfully cold and blizzardy, but Lorena has been helped so much by the Bogarts who share the old house. Really, you'd be delighted with the little church and its Christmas greens and candles. Lorena doesn't seem to mind the snow that flows in under the doors, or the fact that when she hangs her dish towels in the kitchen, they freeze solid. She's just a glow of happiness, and the country people seem to love her. We are all so grateful to you and to the Elliots."
Presently, Lorena wrote to Father Watson,
"My dear Father Watson, I don't know what to do. You know the kindness of Miss Chadwick and the Elliott ladies to us already. Now they've written to ask if it would be against the rule of our order, when we've been properly recognized, to own the little church and the ground it stands on. I would value your advice. My own feeling is, as you know, that we should own nothing. Corporate poverty means just that. I shall only agree if you insist. And I feel sure that you will not."
Father Watson did not insist. The church and the property remained in the hands of the kindly women who had given its use to Lorena and her companions. But now, a great misfortune was to fall upon the tiny community. Annie wrote to Mary Buxton,
"You will be as dismayed as I am at this news, Mary. Lorena was so happy, and the new sisters who have joined her are so satisfactory and devoted. And now, of all people, Sister Martha has left. Sister Martha, the first of all, and now the first to fall away. And yet I suppose it was inevitable.
Sister Martha, I was just saying a few prayers in the oratory. Isn't the statue of St. Francis terribly dusty?
I hadn't noticed, Reverend Mother.
But everything else is immaculate.
Certainly. It's my duty to dust the oratory, and I do.
But not St. Francis?
I don't hold with graven images, Reverend Mother. I pray to God, not to any Romish statues.
Sister Martha, cleanliness is next to godliness. And you know quite well that we don't pray to the statue of St. Francis. The statue is there simply to remind us of his love for God and how we should copy his virtues.
I can think about him without a statue. Statues are popish to my mind.
But surely you realize, Sister Martha, that we are truly Catholic, although not Roman. The Church is one. It just happens that by a terrible historical accident, there are two branches. One day, they'll come together again.
I don't want to come together with papists, Reverend Mother.
But,
I'll dust the old statue. But you needn't think I hold with this papist nonsense, because I don't.
This same problem soon arose in a new form. Miss Chadwick was forced to write to the Elliots.
My dear friends, I regret so much that you've listened to the rumors which are spreading about our dear foundation at Graymoor. I think you must know the source of them. Please, dear friends, be patient and tolerant. Let me tell you of a conversation I just had with Mother Lorena. You know, I'm sure, that many people are saying that Graymoor is becoming, well, a little too Roman.
My dear Miss Chadwick, I do know. People don't think, you see. They say, don't they, that if these people at Graymoor think that Rome is in the right, why don't they go over to Rome and be done with it?
They do say that, Mother Lorena.
Oh, if it were that simple. But we believe that the two branches of the Church are really one. If we work on our side and the people on the other side work too, then surely in time we can come together and all be one fold and one shepherd.
I know that Father Watson is marvelously persuasive in expounding that doctrine in his sermons. But haven't you noticed, Mother Lorena, that he is receiving more and more criticism about it?
He knows the risk. We spoke of it many years ago. We can only go on as God shows us the right, no matter what the cost.
In the winter of 1909, the sisters faced a stern challenge. Some 200 workers who had been constructing an aqueduct between Peekskill and Garrison were laid off with only a day's notice. These men, many of them Negroes from the South, and the rest recent Italian immigrants, had nowhere to go and no resources in the bitter winter. Already the first St. Christopher's Inn up the mountain from the sisters' convent was open to the wayfaring poor. And now both friars and sisters plodded through the snow to beg alms and distribute them, together with medical aid, among the shanties of the desperate workers. Annie wrote of this to Mary Buxton.
It was pitiable, Mary, the straits of those poor men. And there were the wives and children. Lorena and her sister simply browbeat the merchants in Garrison and Peekskill into giving bread and potatoes and beans. But nursing the sick was much more of a problem. And it cost Graymoor dearly, for we have lost Sister Mariana. You remember her, I'm sure. Such a lovely, gentle southern woman. She had a special interest in the Negroes and worked herself to a shadow trying to help them. When she caught cold, the doctor didn't think it was very serious. And then in 3 days, she was dead. I shall never forget the dark-skinned men whom she called her boys, kneeling beside the grave. Lorena told me of something that happened just before Sister Mariana died.
Are you feeling better, Sister?
I'll be quite well. Tomorrow, Reverend Mother.
You've been my right hand for 9 years, Sister. We can't afford to lose you.
Oh, you won't. But I'm glad to have this chance to suffer. Just a little bit.
Why, sister? Is there a special reason?
I offer it up to God in the hope that someday he'll send Graymore sisters into the South to bring the faith to the Negroes. I know how much it's needed.
God willing, I promise it will come, Sister Mariana. Sister, you're in pain. Shall I summon the doctor?
No. It's just so hard to breathe. I worship thee, sweet will of God. I worship thee, sweet will of God.
One day, the full significance of Pope Leo XIII's apostolic letter of 1896 struck Mother Lorena. It was as if a bombshell burst. We pronounce and declare that ordinations carried out according to the Anglican Rite have been and are absolutely null and void. Mother Lorena was stunned. Kneeling before the altar in the little church of St. John in the wilderness, she gazed at the tabernacle in which she had always confidently believed was the real presence. Now what?
My Lord and my God, can it be that we are the wandering sheep? That the very name of our order is a sign to us? Atonement. At one man. Oh God, thy will be done. Deo gratias.
There was nowhere to go but home. The sisters were agreed. Mother Lorena at once told the kind Anglican ladies who had befriended them. And soon she was able to write to Annie.
Miss Chadwick was most understanding. She assures me that whatever the sisters feel is right must guide them, and she will arrange that the deed for the property on which our dear St. John's Church stands will be transferred to whatever authority is proper. She's so good, Annie. We owe so much to those three generous women, and what a joy it is to pray for them night and day.
It took time, but eventually the way was clear. For on October 30th, 1909, the first time in history, a whole community was accepted into the church as a single entity. The letter came from Cardinal Merry del Val, Papal Secretary of State. With regard to your community, there will be no objection to its continuing in the same way, even after its union with the Catholic Church.
Deo gratias.
The wandering sheep has come home. But there is a price upon all things. And in March of 1910, the joy of the newly born community was blasted by a lawyer's letter. Annie wrote of it to Mary Buxton.
Mary, you'll hardly believe it. Miss Elliot and her sister have prevailed upon Miss Chadwick. They demand their property back. They won't even allow the sisters to buy it, even if they had money enough to do so. Lorena and her sisters must leave Graymore, and Lorena says nothing but Deo gratias, and God's will be done. Really, even after all these years, I simply don't understand my sister.
It was true. Mother Lorena had thrown herself upon the everlasting arms in perfect faith that God, who had guided her so far along the way he wished for her, would never desert her.
Lord, make me ever to desire that which is pleasing to thee. May thy will be my will, so that I may neither choose nor reject save that which thou dost choose or reject. And my will ever follow thine.
It was almost a year before Mother Lorena could write to her beloved sister in California.
Dear Annie, it is done. We've taken our vows again, and this time forever. We are now members of the Third Order Regular of St. Francis. Deo gratias. Annie, Our mother will hear of this, of course. Please try to make her understand. My heart is so full, Annie. Do you know what the good priest who received us, delegated by Archbishop Farley, said to me after the ceremony? You will be the mother of many daughters. God grant it may be true.
But there was a heavy shadow over the convent of Greymoor. The sisters did not own the land upon which the convent stood, because Mother Lorena had refused to own it, as she refused to own anything, when the kind Anglican ladies, Julia Chadwick and the Elliott sisters, had offered it years before. The land belonged to the Episcopal Diocese of New York, with the three women as trustees. Now, with Greymoor's conversion to Rome, there was a demand for the land and all that stood upon it. Archbishop Farley appointed a lawyer named Dempsey to try for an out-of-court settlement. Presently, he asked for an interview with Mother Lorena.
It is my duty to tell you, Mother Lorena, that I see no hope at all of a settlement.
Are they so implacable, Mr. Dempsey? It seems so strange, because I know the Elliott ladies to be good and kind and charitable.
No doubt, but they've instructed their lawyers to refuse all negotiations. I'm afraid that after all, we must take the case to court.
No, that's impossible, Mr. Dempsey.
But why? You have an excellent case, Reverend Mother. I can almost guarantee that you will win.
We cannot go to court.
The Archbishop told me that you disliked the idea, but...
You don't understand, do you, Mr. Dempsey? We are Franciscans. We own nothing. We live by charity and by charity alone. How can we demand property as a right in law?
Oh, but look here, Mother Lorena. Think of the work that's gone into making Greymoor what it is. I understand there was nothing at all when you came. Just rocks and a tumble-down little deserted church. During 12 years, people have contributed money and their own hard work to build the convent and create the gardens and everything else.
I have thought of that. And prayed, too, Mr. Dempsey. And it seems to me that everything was given to us just because we are Franciscans and poor. Can their charity be a reason for breaking our vow?
But where on earth will you and your sisters go?
God will provide. He always does. And only God can know what it will cost me to leave this place. But our blessed Father, St. Francis, said quite clearly, if any man sue thee at law for thy coat, give him thy cloak also.
He did?
Oh, yes.
Heaven help us.
Oh, heaven will, Mr. Dempsey.
Tell me, what does Father Watson say about all this? I understand he's the spiritual director of the convent.
Father Watson is just now studying in the seminary in preparation for his ordination. So I've only been able to write to him. I'll let you know what he advises when I hear.
I hope he'll make you see reason, Reverend Mother. It isn't that I don't admire your stand. It's very commendable. But as a lawyer, you can hardly expect me to agree with it.
We must all labor in our vocation, Mr. Dempsey. We're so grateful for your interest and effort. You know that you shall have our prayer.
The letter from Father Watson, who was soon to become Father Paul James Francis, arrived.
But you must consider your duty not only to your sisters, but to the people of the countryside who have contributed so much to the building of the convent. Most of them are Catholic. They have helped you in the past. Now, when you can help them even more than before, have you the right to desert them? I put this before you as a point to consider. At the least, write out for Mr. Dempsey the whole story of your coming to Greymoor and the events of the years, so that he may know exactly what the circumstances are. As you know, Miss Chadwick does not support the action, and she deserves whatever help you can give her in what must be a most painful situation.
So much Mother Lorena was quite willing to do. Because of Miss Chadwick's opposition to the suit, nothing could be done, and the case dragged on. Meantime, Mary Buxton, the Englishwoman who had regained her faith in God through a chance meeting with Mother Lorena many years before, wrote to her friend Annie, Lorena's sister, in a burst of delight.
Annie, I've made up my mind. I'm going to Greymoor, not as a visitor, but to stay. That is, if they'll have me. Oh, Annie, after so many years of watching Graymore grow, perhaps I can become a part of it and join in the work.
Join in the work. Many came to Graymore with that vocation. Mother Lorena wrote to Annie,
"At last, Annie, our first band of mission sisters has gone out. They're well trained, and I know they're needed. The poor dear pastor who asked for them has an enormous parish in the Texas Panhandle with so many little Mexican children to teach. This is the beginning, Annie."
Now the blow fell. Since Mother Lorena and her sisters would not contest, the case went by default. Mother Lorena replied to Dempsey's letter.
"You tell me, Mr. Dempsey, that there's been a judgment against us. I'm sorry, for your sake, since you've worked so hard on our behalf. But let me tell you what happened when I told my sisters the news." "So that is the case, sisters. We have less than a month to find another place to live."
"My, won't St. Francis be pleased?"
"You're quite right, little Sister Gabriel.
He will be pleased.
Isn't it possible to appeal, Reverend Mother?"
"It is, Sister Monica. Mr. Dempsey urges that we do so. At first I was tempted and even agreed. But then I felt so unhappy that I knew I was wrong. I've refused to appeal."
"Are we going to wander the roads, Reverend Mother? Like the first Franciscans?"
"We could, Sister Gabriel. Or we might live in the hostel. That isn't on disputed ground."
"There's not nearly enough room, Reverend Mother."
"Well, we could camp out like the gypsies who come here sometimes."
"I believe you'd like it, Sister Gabriel."
"Well, why not?
We all expect to suffer worse hardships in the missions, Reverend Mother."
"Yes, of course."
"My daughters, my beloved sisters, how proud I am of you. Now, there's just one thing. The brothers Christopher, who tend our garden, and William the driver, who brings up our stores from Garrison, they'll hear of this, and they'll be unhappy."
"Reverend Mother, they've already heard, and they're furious."
"Oh, I was afraid of that. Now, sisters, you must speak to everyone you know and beg them to say nothing against charity. There are good people in the township who feel that we are in the wrong. Nothing that we say or that anyone at Graymore says must be used to make trouble or discord between us and the good people who've been our friends."
"Mother, tell me, how can people, good people, do such wrong things?"
"They don't mean to do anything wrong, Sister Gabriel. They believe that they're right. We must not judge them."
"But they are wrong, aren't they, Reverend Mother?"
"They've been kind to us for many years. Now, so it seems to us, they're not kind. But perhaps in all this they are obeying God's command. Shall we forget to trust in God, my sister?"
And at that very moment, a quite unforeseen thing was happening. The Honorable Hamilton Fish, for many years Speaker of the House in Washington, a resident of Garrison, and senior warden of the Episcopal Church there, had suddenly heard of the proposed eviction. After inquiring into the circumstances, he wrote to the elder Miss Elliot,
"My dear Miss Elliot, you will forgive me for interfering in what may appear to you to be a private matter. Surely you must realize that an act of such injustice against helpless women, whatever their beliefs, can only injure the cause of Christian brotherhood. I have taken the liberty of writing to our bishop, asking him to consider a monetary settlement, if you as trustees of the property will agree. He is altogether in accord with this agreement. I have no idea, of course, whether the sisters have any money or not. But frankly, my dear Miss Elliot, I would myself contribute toward the purchase, if only to show that here in America, no one can be penalized for honest beliefs."
The gallant and chivalrous gentleman won the day. Friends of Graymore contributed the $2,000 required, and the convent was safe at last. Not long after, Annie wrote to Lorena.
"My dear sister, Mother and I are coming to New York for a visit. She refuses absolutely to go to Graymore, yet I think she is longing to see you. Strange that 20 years haven't softened her feelings about your choice of career at all. But you will come to see her, won't you?
That interview wrung Mother Lorena's heart.
Well, I suppose I may say I told you so, Lorena. I said you'd end up in Rome, didn't I?
Yes, Mother.
What your poor father would think. But then what we old people think doesn't matter at all.
Please, Mother.
Such a dreadful disappointment. My eldest daughter, who could have married well and been a comfort to me, throwing it all away. And now, a papist. It's a wonder the shock of it didn't kill me. Indeed, it is, Lorena.
Doesn't it matter to you that I'm happy, Mother?
Happy? Couldn't you have been happy in a normal way? Look at me. Haven't I been happy?
You're getting tired, Mother. It's time for Lorena to go.
I suppose so, but I... Oh, well, it was nice of you to spare a minute to visit your mother, Lorena. I suppose I ought to be grateful.
I wish... Oh, Mother, if you'd come to Greymoor and see for yourself.
Go to that place. Never. But run along, Lorena. You've chosen your own life, and I wish you joy of it. But you need never expect to see me again if you wait for me to visit your precious Greymoor.
God help her. Poor little mother. Oh, God help her. And bring her to the only comfort, the shelter of his sacred heart.
Now the sisterhood began to grow astonishingly. Most of the sisters were skilled needlewomen, and under Mother Lorena's direction, they began to make vestments and altar cloths for sale. This income, added to what they received from charity, went to support the convent and the groups of missionary sisters who now went out to many parts of the country and even to Canada. Mary Buxton, now Sister Mary Claire, wrote to Annie,
"Yes, it's true. Reverend Mother is going deaf. But she's as busy as ever. Sometimes I'm afraid she's a great trial to Sister Monica. You know we have a special fund called Charity for whatever little money we have left over from expenses. Well, the other day, Reverend Mother came to Sister Monica with a letter in her hand.
Sister Monica, is there any charity?
No, there's not, Reverend Mother. Not a penny.
Oh, dear.
In fact, we owe several bills.
Oh, certainly we must pay our bills, Sister Monica. But... do look at this letter from a poor sister in India. She has a whole house full of little orphans to care for.
But there isn't any charity left, Reverend Mother.
Not even a few dollars?
Not even a few...
Sister Monica, you're so clever with figures. I'm sure you could find a little charity somewhere if you tried hard.
Oh, somehow I always do, Reverend Mother. And I never understand how.
There, I knew you'd manage. And don't worry, sister. You'll see. We'll receive a lovely lot of new orders for vestments. God will make it all come right in the end.
The years of growth sped by. Then one day, Mother Lorena wrote to Annie...
Annie, can you guess? No, you couldn't. Not if you tried 1,000 times. Do you know who's here at Greymoor in our ladies' hostel? Miss Alice Elliott. Truly. Both she and her sister joined the church last year on a trip to the Holy Land. Surely nothing is impossible to God. Miss Alice is an invalid. I offered her our nicest room in the hostel. She came yesterday. And God willing, I hope she may stay here with us to care for her until God calls her home. Could there be a more marvelous ending to the story of a lawsuit? And Annie, there are people who say there's no God.
The Greymoor sisters began to spread their wings. Everywhere, pastors and bishops became aware that Greymoor provided dedicated sisters for a very special mission, that of regaining for the faith those who had slipped away. Mother Lorena explained it to Sister Monica, whom she had already designated as her vicaress, now that her own health was slowly but surely failing.
You must rest, Reverend Mother. You must. That trip to Canada was too much for you.
I wouldn't have missed it, Sister. Do you know, in Edmonton, there was an old Ukrainian woman who spent the whole night in the chapel?
The whole night?
Yes. And one of our sisters found her there in the morning and asked her what her trouble was.
Oh, what was it?
The old woman simply looked at her and said, Sister, this is the first time in 30 years since I left Russia for Canada that I've been able to kneel in the presence of my God.
That's what you mean by mending the nets, isn't it, Reverend Mother?
Yes. You know, we have so many requests for sisters.
Goodness, yes. They come in every mail.
Sister, the choice must always go to those who need help in bringing the strayed sheep back to the fold. That is our mission. And someday, if God is good, we may have a house in Italy at Assisi. But first and foremost, our mission is to bring the lost sheep home.
Unity. Atonement. At one moment. You've always said that our order's name has two meanings, which are really one.
We must never forget it, Sister Monica. At one moment. That all should be one in the shelter of his hand, who's the shepherd of sheep.
In 1932, Mother Lorena heard from Annie that her mother had suffered a serious stroke. Lorena could not go to California. Instead, she went to the tabernacle.
Oh, God, have mercy on my little mother. Bring her to thyself. Give her comfort and thy help in her hour of sorrow. Grant her thy peace.
And within a few months, there came a letter from Annie.
Lorena, Mother has rallied from her stroke amazingly, so much so that her doctor agrees that she can safely undertake what she wants above all else to do, and that is to go to Graymore to die.
Oh, God, how good you are. Deo gratias.
Lorena's mother died at Graymore, a Catholic. Not long thereafter, Annie joined the church. But Mother Lorena's health was swiftly failing. Yet it was a long death, and one of great continuous pain, which no medical science could arrest or alleviate. One day, Sister Monica, watching by her bedside, saw that she was softly repeating something over and over.
Reverend Mother, what are you saying?
Oh, it's a verse I've found comforting all during my years as a religious, Sister Monica. You may like to remember it, too.
Can you say it for me, Reverend Mother?
I'll try. Come, pain ye shall have and be blind to its ending. Come, fear ye shall have with the skies overcasting. Come, change ye shall have, for 'tis far ye are wending. No crown shall ye have for your thirst and your fasting, save the great heart of love and sweet life everlasting. Cry out, for one heedeth who leadeth you home.
Mother. Oh, Mother. Reverend Mother. You must not leave us.
Who leadeth you home. Peace. Peace.
On Monday, in Holy Week 1935, as the whole community of the Sisters of the Atonement assembled for early Mass, Father Paul James Francis, who had been the Reverend Lewis Watson when first he received a letter from Lorena White so many years ago, spoke to the bowed heads of sisters.
Our Mass this morning will be offered for the soul of Reverend Mother. Consider, my sisters, the epistle for this day. It is from the prophet Isaiah. The Lord hath opened my ear, and I do not resist. Therefore I have set my face as a most hard rock, and I know I shall not be confounded.
Father Paul wrote to Annie after Mother Lorena had been laid to rest on her beloved mountain.
What can I say? You need no eulogies from me. But perhaps you do not know a verse which Mother Lorena wrote many years ago. It is what she believed with all her soul, a prophecy of what was surely to come when her mission in this world was ended. O beauty ever ancient, O beauty ever new, the beatific vision enthralls the raptured view. The bride and bridegroom enter, the marriage song is sung. Lo, time is ever ended, eternity begun. Though her body lies at Greymoor, where God led her so many years ago, for Mother Lorena, eternity has begun.
Yes, in that holy week of 1935, eternity began for Mother Lorena of Greymoor. For they can never forget her words.
My dear daughters, let us ask of God this grace to have many foundations, small and poor, but rich in love for God, love for one another, and love for the souls of men.